Welcome to episode 218 of Board Game Blitz, a podcast about all things board games that you can listen to in less time than it takes to stop re-watching Chapel Roan's performance at the VMAs. Board Game Blitz is sponsored by Gray Fox Games. This week, we are talking about big games. First, we discuss a couple games we've played recently, Wilmot's Warehouse and Expressions. Then, we discuss our top five games that don't fit on a standard board game shelf. And now, here are your hosts,
Ambi
and Crystal.
Recently, I played a couple new games, and I'm not sure which one to talk about, so I'll let you pick, Crystal.
I get to pick?
Yeah. So I played Wilmot's Warehouse and The Gang. Both of these my friends brought over, and they were on my Wanted playlist, and they're relatively new. So Wilmot's Warehouse is a cooperative memory-ish game, and The Gang is a cooperative Texas Hold'em style game. So which would you like to hear about?
Well, I own the video game version of Wilmot's Warehouse on my Switch. I haven't played it yet, but I would love to hear about the board game version because maybe that will inspire me to try the video game version on my Switch. So let's go with Wilmot's Warehouse.
All right. So Wilmot's Warehouse is a board game version of the video game, as you mentioned, published in 2024 by CMYK. Designed by Ricky Haggett, Richard Hogg, and David King. So the video game Wilmot's Warehouse, I've played it like once, I think. I'm not sure when or where because I don't have it on Steam. So I don't know, like, I'm not sure. I remember playing it though. It's like a organizational game where you're a little cube and you're moving around little cubes that have different symbols on them and you're putting them in a warehouse and then customers come and it's timed and you have to like get their orders. But you have to remember kind of like where you put the things because it's just a big empty space and you're kind of like, you have a bunch of little cubes that have different symbols. So you're like putting the like symbols together and you have this whole setup of organizing things and then the customers come and you go get what they want as fast as you can. So the board game version, I think actually did a really good job of implementing the feel and theme of the game, but has it different because it's a cooperative memory game. You're not physically moving around or anything, but there's a grid board and there's a bunch of icons. So similar to the video game, there's a bunch of like little square icons, cards with different looking icons. And on your turn, you're going to be taking the top card of a pile and then placing it face down on the board. So the base thing is you'll look at it, everyone will look at it, and then they'll place it face down wherever you want that's connected to a previous place. The first one starts in the middle and then you build around that. And then there's stacks relating to days of the week. So like Monday is just that. And then Tuesday, you'll have a card that adds a challenge. So for example, one of our challenges was only you and the person next to you can look at the card before placing it. And then like you can describe it to the other people, but they don't see it. Another one was that you don't look at the card before placing it. And so you just place it somewhere and then everyone else tells you like what it was. And you're trying to remember what everything is because at the end of all of the placing, you place like the whole week, there's a bunch of cards out on this grid. Then you have a real-time phase where you're delivering to customers. So then you'll have a deck of cards that are all of the icons plus extra icons. So it's like all the icons and you're going through it as fast as you can, trying to match them up to these face down tiles that you put down on the board. So depending on how fast you do that, you get a little score and you get to go to a video that's linked with like Matt from Shut Up and Sit Down, I think made a little video.
Oh, that's neat.
For depending on your level. It's kind of funny and thematic because like your worker's in a warehouse and he's like, oh, do better.
I don't know. So clearly you all did great.
We did okay, I think. But yeah, so like the way you try to remember is kind of like a memory story thing. You can tell a story with the icons and be like, okay. So in our game, it started with a thing that looked like a dog bowl. So we said it was a dog bowl and there was a dog. And then we picked up a thing that looked like a spiral, I think. And we said like, oh, the dog got dizzy. And so we put that up there. And then we picked up another thing that looked like food. And we're like, oh, this is the food. We picked up a thing that looked like factory. And then we're like, okay, so this is the factory that made the food. And so like we kind of grouped the things near to remember this whole story about a dog who ate ice cream from a factory and got dizzy after watching TV and like this was all part of the story that we made up.
In the rule book, is that how you're intended to play or did your group just come up with this? Because this is
I've seen other people playing it like that with the story. I don't know if it's in the rule book because I didn't read the rule book. But like one of those challenge cards was that you have to say that each thing is associated with smell or something smelly. So maybe it is supposed to, like maybe in the rule book it does mention doing a story, because you're supposed to like associate the icon with something, I guess, to help remember.
Okay.
But that worked with our story because we had a dog. He had smelly stuff. But yeah, so I really enjoyed it. It's like one of those games that people say is an activity more than a game, but I mean, it's still a game. You're getting a score at the end, but it's like a cooperative thing. And I really enjoyed like doing cooperative memory. I don't like normal memory games, but cooperative memory makes it better. And then like making the story is funny and fun. I haven't played it with my kids yet, but I think it would be fun to play with my kids. It was my friend's copy. They brought it over and we played. So I want to try it with my kids because they also have like a really good imagination. When they see like images, they have a good imagination of what that could be. They're like, oh, this could be that. And I'm like, oh yeah. Because I don't know.
This only works though until everything is a skeleton.
Yeah. So it would be interesting like seeing what different stories they come up with the different symbols. Because like if you first look at it, you'll think it looks like something, but then someone else says, oh, I think it looks like that. And like, oh, okay. Then you see that. And so like having different people with different thoughts of what the images look like is neat. And so I think it'd be really fun with kids because their minds are more open. So yeah, that was Wilmot's Warehouse. I also talked about both this and the gang on my August recap video on YouTube. So if you want to hear about the gang and were disappointed that Crystal picked Wilmot's Warehouse, then you can hear about that too. But yeah, Wilmot's Warehouse was fun. I liked it better than the video game because I never really got into the video game. But I think like the video game is well regarded too.
All right. Well, I am talking about a cooperative game today as well. And that is Expressions. Expressions is designed by Isaac Meyer and published by Barnmaid Games. It is a 2-5 player game, which I think definitely works best at its higher player counts, and that'll become obvious as to why pretty quick. It is a clue-giving game with kind of similarities to The Crew, for anyone who is familiar with that game. Ow, and I forgot I have the game here. Where do we? For those of you who watch on YouTube, I always forget that we can actually show you the stuff. So in Expressions, there are 5 different colored suits that range in number from 1 to 10. So there's 50 cards in total. The number of cards each player gets varies based on the player count. And all of the cards have some different iconography around the edges. And those things indicate what types of clues you can give when you play the card out. So on a player's turn, they can do one of 2 things. And this is actually a little reminiscent of Hanabi. You can either give a clue or guess a card. So that's a little similar, but you're guessing a card in someone else's hand, unlike Hanabi, where you're having to guess cards in your own hand. So when you're giving clues, the only legal clues that you can give are to say, I have more of this numeral in my hand, and that could be one other or multiple others. You could say, this was the last of this color in my hand. You can say, this is the lowest of this color in my hand, or this is the highest of this color in my hand. So then knowing what cards are in the deck at the beginning, it is really rough because you just have very little information to go on. But every time something gets guessed correctly, the card that was guessed goes into Harmony, and all cards that have been played stay face up for the remainder of the game. So that card goes into Harmony, and the person who guessed the card also gets to discard a card from their hand into Harmony as well. So you can modify your own hand via the discarding, which is important to make your hand a little easier to guess potentially. Opposite of Harmony is the Agony side. And if you ever guess incorrectly, the card that you guess gets pulled out of whoever's hand has it, and you have to discard a card into Agony instead. And at the end of the game, you want there to be more cards in Harmony than Agony. All of the clues that get played out will go to Agony. There's a timer, there's a little stack of cards that gets pulled to the side to use as the timer. And once that runs out, the game is over. So all clues remaining on the table, they go to Agony. All cards left in players' hands, they go to Agony. So you have a limited amount of time to guess as many things correctly as you can to get cards into Harmony. But it's really It's one of those games where it's fun to make those realizations where you're looking at your hand and somebody played a one saying that they have more ones in their hand. And then you're looking at the table and you're like, wait, there's the green one and the red one. And I have the yellow one. So they have to have the purple one. Like those little moments of, realization happen a lot in a game like this. It is relatively samey each time you play it. The experience isn't going to change a lot from game to game, but if you like this style of games, like if you get like Hanabi or The Crew or games of that ilk, this is another really great one to add. And I've never seen this before. I'm sure it's not the first time, but I've never seen it before. This game comes in a box that is, I don't know, probably like 5 by 5 inches-ish. It's a small box, but not like teeny tiny. Maybe like 2 Oink boxes side by side, if anybody wants to use that as a reference. And for a really small card game, these are the types of games that people like to throw in their pocket or their purse or their quiver. And the game also came with a tuck box that can use instead of the full-size box. And in addition to the full-size rule book that came with it, it comes with a QR code. Oh, it's on the box itself, so you can scan to get the rules. So you don't have to bring the full rule book. And the back of the rule book is the normal Harmony and Agony trackers, along with the details for the number of players. But in the deck, there's another little card that does that too. So they've set you up to tote this game around however you want, basically. Like, if you want to keep it in its box and play it, like that, you can do that. If you want to throw it in your purse, they've already equipped you with how to do that. This seems like an obvious thing, and I never thought about that before, but like, why are more publishers not doing the tuck box inside the other box? I mean, cost is probably the reason, but like, tuck boxes are not usually super expensive, so I don't know. I thought that was a nice little touch, and the game itself is fun. I really enjoyed it. I've played it physically, like in person and digitally on Board Game Arena, and I like both experiences. I will say the digital version on Board Game Arena has one advantage in that they have at the bottom of your player screen area, they have a grid showing all of the cards in the deck, 1 through 10, all of the colors. And as cards get played out, it eliminates them the visual. So it's helpful. Just easier at a glance to be able to see what has already been played and what is still possible. You can do that when you're playing the game physically. You just have to be like, okay, let me look. Are there any 4s? Are there any 5s? How many green cards are out? So it's just quicker to figure that stuff out when you're playing it digitally, but the physical version is still very fun as well. I think you would like this one, Andy.
I did. I played it once. Five players, I think. Yeah, my friend brought it over. I played it in June or something. I haven't played it multiple times, so I could see how the sameness would happen. But I did enjoy it. I liked deduction a lot.
This to me feels like I wouldn't necessarily want to play this game over and over and over again with the exact same people, because I think a meta definitely would develop, similar to games like The Mind, where you eventually start accidentally giving clues. Oh, I should have clarified, I did not specify, but the clues that you play down on the cards are the only information you can give. You cannot obviously talk about the cards in your hand in any other context, but I should have made that clear. But yeah, like in familiar friend groups, eventually sometimes a meta develops like, oh, if she plays the one as the lowest, then she definitely has the 10 in her hand or whatever kind of a thing. Like she won't do that unless she has the 10. So this is one of those games that I think I would really enjoy teaching to new gamers, or no, not just people new to gaming, but like to new people, like at a game convention or somewhere else. This would be a fun one to carry around and be like, oh, have you tried this? Let me teach it to you. I think it would be really good for that for me.
And with the tuck box, you can.
So that is Expressions. Oh, and also the colors and faces on each of the moods, like the suits or moods, are strangely reminiscent of the 5 moods from Inside Out. Whether that was intentional or not, I don't know. But like literally they're named anger, joy, sadness. Like there's no copyright infringement here, but you can tell that they got some inspiration from Inside Out. We occasionally do top five lists on the show, and we know that people enjoy those, but, you know, we don't tend to do joint top five lists. And for good reason, often, because while you and I do have some crossover in the games that we like, we don't often play the same games at the same time, or, like, it's hard to coordinate that stuff in a way that would make sense for us, because we're not playing the same games together. Mm-hmm. So we usually do our individual lists. But when it came to this one, we are pretty in sync. And so that is why we are doing our combined top five games that do not fit in a Kallax shelf. And for those of you who are like, what's a Kallax? It is kind of the widely recognized popular board game shelving option from IKEA. It is squares, very simple shelves that are just like squares, and you can get them in different configurations, like 2x4 or 5x5 or however many you want. But a lot of board gamers own Kallax shelves or something similar to them. And so we are going to talk about games that don't fit in those shelves.
We're talking about the standard Kallax shelf. I know they like recently announced or released like a new version that's like for the TV and it has bigger openings that can fit some of those. I saw a link for that somewhere.
I did not hear about this. I should not go look. I have games on the floor. Like, I have my two 5x5 Kallaxes completely filled, and there are still games on the floor. But I can't fit another shelf in my dining room.
But yeah, so for this list, I thought about games that I own that are not in my Kallax shelf because they don't fit. But for number five is a game that I own, and I do put it in my Kallax shelf. It just sticks out a bunch.
If it sticks out, it doesn't fit, right? You can still, just because you can partially get it in there.
It's fitting in there right now, but yeah, it sticks out like this much.
Oh, that's a lot for our audio listeners. Amy's holding up an impressive size.
Maybe it's not that much. I don't know. Anyway.
You're not a guy, Amby. Guys are the ones who always exaggerate that.
Anyway, for our number five, I said Antiquity, which is a game. It comes in a big box. We're just talking about box size, not the game at all.
At some point, we're going to start voguing, basically, by trying to, like, illustrate box sizes. Yeah.
But anyways, Antiquity is a splatter game. They make, like, heavy economic Euro-type games. But in that game, you're, like, building a city, and there's lots of stuff going on. There's different win conditions that you pick, but it's like an older game. I don't know if it has a newer version with a smaller box, but the box we have is fairly big, or like long. It's very long. The width is like a normal.
What parts of the game require a box that long? Is it like a board specifically, or
there is a board? I haven't played it in a long time, so I'm not sure if the board is even as big as the box.
Okay.
But yeah, it might be. It must be the board. And there's also like player sheets that you fold out, and because you have your own little big player board thing, but that's like cardstock type thing that you fold out, and that might also be tall. I don't remember how big those are. So I don't know if it actually needs that big of a box, but it is.
Our number four game is Fireball Island, which is a Restoration Games reprint of an older board game that came out a few decades ago, and the new one just came out a handful of years ago, and it is a fun, light family weight game where you are moving an explorer around a volcanic island collecting treasures and trying not to let Volcar, the evil volcanic, is he a god? I don't know what, he's the creature at the top of the volcano, basically, and he's gonna spit fireballs down these little tracks on the pathways that you might be standing on and will knock your explorers over. It had a lot of like table appeal, I think, when the game first came out. And Restoration Games did a really good job of adding some more strategic elements to their version of it. And the board itself is 3D molded plastic, and it comes in three sections that all kind of slot together. And they do, like, since they do come apart a little bit, like, the box is, it's smaller than I guess it could be, but it's still very large. I sometimes have trouble getting it all back in the box. I think they originally included directions for how to box it back up, and I always forget how to do it right. But it is entirely the board that is the reason for the huge box size in this case, but it is, for me, worth keeping on top of my Kallax shelves because it is such a fun experience. And now that I'm thinking about it, oh my gosh, the next time my nephews come to visit, we absolutely have to play this. Like,
yeah.
They will lose their tiny minds at Fireball Island. They still beg my sister to play Korra Quest every Aww. Week. She has to limit it to one time a week because she likes board games. Like, she plays games with me when I'm around and whatever, but she's not like a hardcore board gamer. And Korra Quest is, you know, it's got some meat on the bones. Yeah. And she's like, I can only do this once a week because she has to run the whole game. So, but I love Fireball Island. And so that is why it's our number 4.
All right. Our number 3 is one we both like, and that's the Exit the Game Advent Calendars. So Exit the Game is a series of escape room type games. Those boxes are small and can fit in a Kallax easily. But the Advent Calendars, the first time I got one of these, so the Advent Calendar is an Advent Calendar for, you open one box each day up until Christmas. So there's 24 different boxes. Each of them have like a little puzzle in it for the escape room. And it's a whole story usually having to do with some Christmassy, wintry theme. And so the first time I got one, I didn't know how big the box was. And then I got it, I was like, oh my gosh, this is huge.
I had the same reaction. I was like, whoa, like, and then was still impressed by how much they fit into like, was still impressive how much content was in that large box.
Yeah. I'm not sure if, like, the width, height, or the height could fit in the Kallax. I haven't actually tried because it's an Advent Calendar. It's like an exit game. I just brought it upstairs and played it, so I haven't actually tried. Have you tried putting it in the Kallax or no?
I think I might have. I know it is sitting on top of my Kallax, yeah. So I either tried and failed or looked at it, didn't even try, and just threw it up there. It's skinny. It's a, like, thin box. Like,
but it's,
yeah, if you think about, like, older board games like Monopoly, things like that, like the height of the box itself, if it's laying on a table, is not that big, but it is both wide and long.
And it's both dimensions.
Yeah, in the other two dimensions, it is chonky. Yeah. So yeah, the Advent Calendars are not really a traditional board game, but we love them, and so we wanted to include them as our number 3. Our number 2 game is another one that both of us really enjoy, and that is Klask, and that is spelled K-L-A-S-K, all capital letters. You have to do it all capitals. There's no lowercase letters here. And Klask is essentially a tabletop version of air hockey, kind of, but instead of a smooth surface and a puck, you have these little paddles that you are controlling via magnets where you put your hand under the board and there's a thing stuck on top of the board and a ball that you are hitting around. And what's neat about it is you're not just trying to score goals on the other player. There's also these little magnetic pieces that sit in the middle of the board. And if you can get those magnetic pieces to stick to the other player's, what's the thing you're holding? Paddle's not the right word, but yeah, the thing that they're hitting the ball with. If you can get two of those to stick on that, that's also a point for you. So there are multiple ways to score in the game, and often you end up doing that to yourself sometimes, like accidentally, and that creates some really fun moments. I adore this game. It is always a winner when I bring it out. I do not plan on ever getting rid of it, even though the box is ginormous. And anytime I want to take it somewhere, I always am like, ugh, do I really want to lug this game over to my friend's house? And then I'm like, yes, I do. And I take it. Thankfully, it does have a handle, so it is easier to carry for that. What are your thoughts on Klask?
This is, for a long time, this was the only game that was not in my Kallax that we owned. So we have it on the floor next to our Kallax. We put our get rid of pile also on the floor So like it's in the corner and then the get rid of pile is like a little further from that. And so I always clarify like, okay, this stuff is get rid of, but not class. We're keeping that. And I remember my kids like playing with it. They haven't played like by the rules yet. They love like playing around with the magnets and seeing it, having it go in the hole and having the magnet spin around when they, because if you like, if you go too fast, the magnet paddle thing, or whatever it's called, will like spin around.
Yeah.
And they go into the other ones and they get stuck to each other. But so my kids love playing with that. And they're like, no, don't get rid of this one. They're like, no, I'm not getting rid of that. It just is too big to fit in the shelf. So yeah, Clask is great.
And that is why it's our number two.
And our number one is now our other game that I have that is not in the Calyx. And that is Crokinole, which definitely does not fit. It fits on our wall now.
Because, I think that's storage. Like for a lot of people that own Crokinole boards, I think hanging it on the wall kind of as a showpiece when they're not playing it is fairly common.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you don't, like there's no space to put it on the table somewhere. Because Crokinole is a table game. Like it's a big circle. It's a dexterity game. So you're flicking a disc into a hole in the middle. There's rings in the middle. So there's like the bullseye hole and then a ring out with like pegs around it and then another ring. And you're trying to like flick in between the pegs into the hole in the middle. And then the next person will try to flick. And if there's a disc already on there of the opponent, then they'll have to hit that first. And so it's a very simple rules dexterity game, but it's a huge board, a huge circle board. And so, yeah, like storage is hard. You don't want to like have it on the floor, like vertically, because that would damage the wood like siding thing. And so a lot of people hang it up, so we have like a little mount where you can hang it up. I think with our previous board we just had it lying flat like up on some other shelf where we had space. But and my parents have one, they just have it on top of the piano.
Nice. That seems like a good storage option.
Yeah, so like it does not fit in a shelf, like any shelf, not even just the Calyx shelf, like any shelf it won't fit.
Well,
because
even
it's a
if
huge
it
circle
did like fit in a shelf, it would be weird because it's a
well,
circle,
yeah, what,
right,
like, yeah, and what shelf is going to be that deep, like
none, like, none,
and that big.
I finally ordered a Crokinole board through a Kickstarter that, and I think it's actually going to be shipping in the next like couple of months, I want to say. I know I already filled out my pledge manager and all of that, so I've loved Crokinole for years and I've played it at a number of different board game events, but I'm finally going to own my own board and I'm really excited about that.
Woohoo!
Yeah! So that was our number one game that does not fit on a Calyx shelf. We would love to hear from you all what your favorite games are that don't fit on a Calyx. So hit us up on social media or pop a note in the show discussion channel in our Discord. If you're not in our Discord, what? It's free to join. Come on over. Hang out with us. We do weekly game nights and a lot of other fun stuff there. And we would love to see you. And yeah, we hopefully we'll see you there.
And that's it for this week's Board Game Blitz. Visit our website, boardgameblitz.com, for more content and links. This episode was sponsored by Gray Fox Games. Grab your weapons, or maybe your credit cards, because Clans of Midgard and Rivers of Midgard the card game are now available for pre-order on grayfoxgames.com. And don't forget that Blitzketeers get 20% off non-exclusive items by using the code BGBLITZ24 at checkout. Join the Blitzketeer community on Discord for game nights, discussions, and more by following the link in the show notes. Support the show by leaving us a rating and review on your podcast provider. And if you like us a lot and want to support us monetarily and get some cool perks, check out our Ko-fi at ko-fi.com/boardgameblitz today. Our theme song was composed by Andrew Morrow. Until next time, it's fine. It's cool. You can say this game is boring, but you know the truth. Bye, everyone!
Bye!